You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life.
I want to say to men, you can make a massive difference in the world, and it may be only a small part of the world, but it'll be the part that you really care about. But you have the ability and the power to massively affect the lives of the people that you care about. Mm. In fact, the people that you're responsible for.
Now, here's your hosts, Tim and Des.
All right. Well, welcome once again to Momentum all around Australia. It is fantastic to have you tuning in. We are here to essentially help you do life that little bit better. And there's a couple of ways we do that. Just going to point you to the website before we launch into this week's show, momentumaustralia.org. You can have a look around there. Lots of resources there for you. Leave us some feedback if you want. And if you'd like to financially support us too, that would be really, really appreciated. We do run on the sniff of an oily rag at Momentum, but we've been blessed to get all around Australia through the radio stations that you're listening to right now. But before we launch into this week's show, thank you for that. Take a bit of time around the website, momentumaustralia.org. As always, I am joined by my cohort, co-friend, co-host, legend of a man, Des Kennedy. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. Really good. You know, it's a joy to be able to do this. We do this like every week, and it's such a blessing to be able to sow into the lives of men. And we really love it, and we care about it, and it's amazing. The one thing I will mention is our care line. We're so blessed to have a care line and an amazing number for a care line. Men don't easily remember phone numbers, but this one men will remember. So it's 1-800-000-MEN. It's not hard to remember. 1-800-000-636. It's provided by our friends at Caroline Connections, and they are ready to take calls 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. 1-800-000-MEN.
Yeah. And the truth is, we all need confidential conversations at times, safe spaces to open up about things that are happening in our lives. And Des and I have shared a bit about that on the show. And, you know, we're here not to say that we've got everything together. On the contrary, we've learned a lot through mistakes, and that's what's really birthed Momentum. You know, as we get older, the definitions of manhood and masculinity, it seems, certainly have been getting murkier and murkier for some time now. And I think it's fair to say that many of us as men are simply confused about what it means to be a man and what exactly healthy masculinity is and looks like.
Yeah, a book has been recently released, which is to help men wade through these murky waters and really define what a man is and what it looks like. And most importantly, help them through some of the clarity that they can step up to and be men, good husbands, good fathers, good members of the community that God created them to be.
Yeah, the book is called The Manual, Getting Masculinity Right, and it was written by Al Stewart, and he is our special guest on this week's Momentum. Welcome officially, Al, to Momentum.
Thank you, Tim and Des.
So just by introduction, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Myself, I guess I'm a very ordinary man. I grew up in a country town in northern New South Wales. My dad worked at the jail. My mum was a contractor for the post office. Grew up pretty average at sport, actually, but very keen, but average. Brother who's very gifted, but so that, and then at the end of high school, that's a while ago now, in the mid-70s, came to the big city to study, met a beautiful Chinese lady at university, and never quite got around to leaving the big city. So wow. There you go.
Well, that's short and sweet.
I mean, I can go on all day. I'm the world expert on my life. But
so you have kids. Talk a little bit about the kids.
Yeah, with three beautiful daughters and a son. They're all married now. Our son was a little slow off the mark, but I'm an Anglican minister. I married him and I got it done in November. I got all four of them married and I got three grandkids. And for anybody who's listening and struggling with being a dad or a parent, hang in there. Being a grandfather is your reward for parenting.
Yeah, yes. I've heard that. In fact, I know that that's true. There's something extra special about being a grandfather. And Tim, even though he looks really young, is actually a grandfather as well. It's amazing.
Even though he looks young, he's actually not. We've all stepped into that space, and it is actually a real joy, that's for sure. Let's go back to you talking about yourself, because as you said, you are an expert. But tell us a bit about your upbringing, aside from you being average at sport. What was that like for you, your childhood, and most importantly, your relationship with your parents and your dad particularly?
We moved around a lot when I was a kid. I think I went to 7 different schools before I started high school.
Is that because you were thrown out of them, by the way?
My dad moved around a lot. I don't think my dad ever quite settled in a job that suited him. My dad had come from a really tough childhood. I mean, yeah, I won't go into that, but that was really tough. We moved around a lot till we finally settled in the one town where I grew up. Went to a state high school there that I think in the mid-70s, country town. Yeah, it was a reasonably tough environment. Dad wasn't big on communication, but he did care. And in some ways, the way that he showed that he cared, well, what did he do? Taught me to play cricket and put a football in my hand and took me, you know, take me hunting and taught me how to use a fishing rod and all of those things that I guess that's man love if you're growing up in a country town in the 70s.
So what would you hunt for in northern New South Wales?
We'd go shoot rabbits or whatever. He took me. Well, actually, to be really honest, took me pig shooting out to Warren when I was about 15 or 16. Wow. And I pretty much managed every year since then.
Oh, good. Wow. Well done.
A prenup agreement with my wife that I'll sneak off for a hunting trip once a year.
You're keeping your manhood alive.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of an eco-warrior thing, adjusting feral animals. That's, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you describe your relationship with your dad as a good one? What about the teenagers when you guys, you know, I mean, often that can be an interesting time for parents, can't it?
No, generally pretty good. I mean, I left home at 18. I haven't lived at home for a long, long time. So, you know, generally pretty good with my dad. What my dad did manage was that none of the bad stuff that my dad put up with as a kid ended up in our home.
Yeah.
So there was no fear in our home, and you know, Dad was around. Now, Dad liked to drink; he sure did. But we were never afraid in our home. That's a very big thing to be able to say.
No, that is, and because of the effect of alcohol, it's amazing you can say that because it does, and it does create often a bad atmosphere. So that's really cool you can say that.
Yeah. Well, in fact, a lot of my relatives had significant problems with alcohol.
Yeah,
I haven't had a drink for 17 years. So I worked out it's a problem for me, so I've pulled.
Yeah, good on you. Yeah, I mean, interesting. You mentioned the safety piece. We were talking with Dr. Bruce Robinson from the Fathering Project, and I asked him what the difference was between, I think, feeling loved and feeling safe.
Yeah.
And you know, they can feel quite different. It's like, I can know that I'm loved, but if I don't feel safe, that's a whole other thing, particularly in your own home. Let's then get back to you when you first became a husband and particularly a father. Were you conscious, I suppose, of your upbringing? Were the things that you wanted to repeat and other things, like most of us, we go, nope, my kids are not, you know, getting parented like that, or, you know, did that affect you when you became a father, and how did that affect you as a father?
That's a good question. I think it took me a while to work out that just being around as a dad, or just kind of, if you like, being present isn't quite enough.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to work out that I actually needed to listen and try and care for my wife more.
Mm.
If I could say, Kathy's a lovely Chinese woman, and I think culturally she was prepared to put up with a lot, and she probably had to for the first few years. I'm not sure I've arrived at being a Jedi master of a husband after 42 years, but I've learned a lot in that time.
Yeah,
it's a willingness to really listen and try and understand what she needs. It took a fair while for me to learn that.
I can absolutely relate to that. I mean, I was traveling and doing business and, you know, not being a good dad at all. And it's only a real blessing that my first wife was such a great mother that my kids sort of stayed by and large on track. So, yeah, I totally get that.
Interesting that I was actually having that conversation, I think last week, with a close friend. And I said, I've realized that I can be present, but not emotionally present. So I can be around, and this I'm talking about in my marriage now, particularly because my kids are grown up, but I can be there. I can be in the room having the conversation with you, but I'm not emotionally invested in that conversation. And I'm aware of that, and I need to change that in my own life. So fully get what you're saying there. And as guys, can I encourage you, whether it's your wife, your kids, you know, your significant whatever's, that's a huge thing, because being there is a good start. But if you're not really there, then it's only half of the challenge.
Yeah, I've had that exact conversation with my wife many times.
Right.
So what other challenges did you see, Al, in your early fatherhood? What other challenges did you face?
40 years ago, and our daughter is about to turn 40 next year, I've married this Chinese lady. Mixed marriages in Australia were quite rare. When Kath and I started going out, people would stare at us. And I used to have blonde hair. I was this blonde haired buffet from the bush. And she's a lovely Chinese girl. People would stare at us.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I would have gone back to a country town in a nanosecond to live.
Wow.
But we did decide that it was going to be much, much easier for our children to grow up in the city where there are Asian people rather than be, you know, the only Asian face in a country town.
Yeah.
Because literally the place I grew up in, the only Chinese family owned, guess what?
The Chinese restaurant. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. So that was pretty significant. And it's in 40 years, I've been married 42 years. In 40 years, Sydney, where I live, has changed dramatically in terms of mixed marriages and acceptance of Asian people. And that is a good change.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because a lot of us wouldn't have that experience. And obviously for you guys, making that decision at that time was the right decision for you to make. And then, of course, raising kids in that environment too, that's a whole other story and the impact that would have on them.
Yeah. So I think where our kids grew up, being Eurasian wasn't a major issue.
Yeah.
But if we moved elsewhere, they were going to have to deal with a lot of that. So that was the decision we made.
So moving forward from that, you know, generically as a man over the years, what are the things that you struggled with most?
I mentioned alcohol already. For a lot of my relatives, they've had major problems with alcohol. And by major problems, I mean alcohol's ruining your life and you keep drinking. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down one day and a few years ago, I know I had a few too many red wines, and as sometimes happens, that last one had a headache in it. And I sat down the next morning and I worked out the problem that I'd seen myself drinking more and more, kind of sneaks up on you. So I've pulled up, said I haven't, what was that? That was July 2006. I haven't had a drink since then. Do I miss it? Yeah, of course. but it's just a way. It's a way for me to try and bring my best to whatever I'm doing. It mightn't be great, but it's the best I've got. So that's one. And the other one is, if it's just between the three of us, when I was 13, a male relative took me to my first porn movie. It really has been a temptation since then. And so I've had to be quite disciplined to stay away from that. Mm. I've actually found myself, I can't believe how many men I've talked to about that plague, and the internet has made it much more of a plague. Mm. There have been two things that have been the irony is I think actually I've helped a lot of blokes in talking about those two.
Yeah, and being open and raw, as we all are, really helps men understand that they're not alone in dealing with that. I mean, some of the statistics are frightening. Yes. And one of the statistics coming out of America is that 60% of pastors either are currently dealing with or have dealt with their own struggle with pornography in the last 12 months, which is, you know, horrendous. And so, you know, we all need to be open and honest and talk about that in our world. So, we've been talking to Youth for Christ about, you know, the impact of pornography on children, you know, from the age of 6-7 years of age, and it's just devastating.
It is a plague.
Yeah, the irony is, guys, is that we think we're the only one that's struggling with this stuff, and yet when we can actually be vulnerable enough to share this stuff, we realize that actually we're not alone. We're far from alone. And that most guys actually do struggle with quite similar things. And that's certainly why we encourage you here at Momentum to get connected with other guys and find a safe space that you can start having those sorts of conversations. Because the truth is, when you do, you actually realize that you're not alone, you're not the only one, and you're not, there's not something wrong with you, or that you're strange or unfixable or whatever else is going through your head, that many men actually struggle with very similar things. So we'll point you, as we go to a break, to the website momentumaustralia.org. You can reach out to us if you need some help. We can try and point you in the right direction. The care line, as Des mentioned, 1-800-000-636. And we're going to come back on the other side of this break and talk to Al Stewart about his book, The Manual, Getting Masculinity Right. That's the second half of the show coming up for you real soon right here at Momentum.
This is Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. It is Momentum. Tim Adez with you, and our special guest this week is Al Stewart, who has written the book, The Manual, Getting Masculinity Right. Al, we sort of started the show with a bit about you and your background, which I think was helpful for us to understand that. But let's turn to this heart for men that you have and this heart to help men, and then we'll get to the book in a moment. But when did that first start coming alive for you, or you recognizing that you actually had a heart to help guys along the journey?
I became a Christian at age 20 when I was studying. And I come from a fairly tough family. My brother's a carpenter. My dad's a prison officer. I just have a heart for trying to speak to, if you like, ordinary, inverted commas, ordinary Australian men about Jesus. And I get frustrated with how rarely I hear a, if you like, a sermon, or I'm in church where it would engage with them. And I'm trying to make it my my mission in life to speak and explain to Australian men about Jesus and why they ought to follow him.
Yes, yeah,
so in some ways my background. I grew up with my mother, who is a very committed, saintly Christian lady, and my dad, who's says he's an atheist and worked at the prison, et cetera, et cetera. And there's kind of, if you like, I carry both of those around.
Yeah. Well, we all do, don't we? We all have influences by both our parents. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What prompted you then to, having had that heart for men and wanted to speak into men's lives, what was it that drove you to say, oh, I'm going to write a book about this? I'm going to research this and write a book.
I've been speaking at men's things like for years, et cetera. But it was 2018. I was at a men's thing at the Chatswood in Sydney, and there's about 100 blokes in a room, and at a Q&A. And there's a young bloke put his hand up and said, how do you live as a man these days? It's really confusing. And I answered him in cliches about things that men do. And, you know, and as I look back, I didn't give him a proper answer because I didn't have one. And it really bugged me. So much so that I finished up one job and then took, like I say, I took 6 months off to 6 months off to read and think and write this book. So that's what, that was the pebble in the shoe.
The catalyst, yeah.
I wish I could track this young guy down. I haven't been able to find him. I wanted to put the book in his hand and say, that's my answer.
Was it in Sydney or was it regional?
Oh, yeah, in Chatswood, in Sydney, in the north side of the bridge. Young Asian bloke put his hand up and asked that question. And I thought later, I didn't have an answer for him. I do now.
It'd be good to track him down, wouldn't it?
It would be awesome. It'd be really awesome. Is that the hope, Al, for people and guys particularly who read the book, right? That they would have answers to what it means to be a man and masculinity? Was that the goal of the book?
Yeah, I've tried to say, look, what's wrong with our culture in terms of our culture and masculinity? What's gone wrong? Mm. And then what real wisdom does the Bible bring to this? And there's a huge amount in there. What's healthy masculinity actually look like? And then I've gone to six examples of how do you live that out as a son, as a friend, as a workmate, husband, father, etc. Yeah. And just tried to be as simple and practical as I can. The best the best feedback I've had about the book is when blokes tell me they're reading it with their teenage sons. Yeah. And that their teenage son will read it. And I think, yes, that's the goal.
That's a victory.
Yeah, that's awesome. Al, you know, I said to you off air, but I want to say this on air, and I have said this once or twice on the show before, and Des knows me well. I'm not much of a reader. So when I get a book to read as, you know, research for the show, I can sometimes be a little, oh. It's a bit of a chore. But man, your book is really, really easy to read. It's well written. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And obviously, you know, I sit in the space. It's a passion for me. But it just really is really simplistic to understand, to get what you're saying. And there's just some really key stuff in there. And I want to start with the opening line in the book, which is in the foreword, which is written by former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, John Anderson. And he says, the opening line on the book, our boys are in trouble and they're growing into men who are in trouble. And I thought, wow, that's a powerful opening line. So for you, can you explain what you think he was meaning by trouble? What does that mean? Our boys and men are in trouble.
Yeah. Well, particularly he picks up the idea. There's a whole lot of indicators that tell you that boys are struggling. There's the John Gray's book, The Boy Crisis, lists it all for the USA. But if you look, we're tracking the same way, just a little bit behind them. So for example, in the school system, we've got a school system that wouldn't say it's a conspiracy, but certainly a school system that favours girls in the way that education's done. So 58% of university graduates are female, and the gap between men and women gets wider as you get into higher degrees. So boys struggling at school, there's confusion for the young guys growing up in terms of what is masculinity. If I act like a man, is it toxic, et cetera. Mm. There's more and more trend for boys to, you know, as you quote, girls are more and more empowered, and that's a good thing. But boys more and more dropping out into a virtual world, which would be computer games or pornography or whatever. And then as you move into adulthood, or I also think you can be a 30-year-old boy, but anyway, you know, men, the more and more stats say men, loneliness, depression, the suicide rate for men is around 2,500 a year in Australia. In 18 to 24-year-olds, suicide is the highest cause of death, and then the suicide spikes again after midlife in the 40s. The suicide rate for men is like three times what it is for women, et cetera. So there's a lot of indicators men are struggling. And I can't help but wonder whether that part of it is a loss of kind of purpose and why are we here and what, how do I live this out? We've got a culture that tells us, you know, women could do anything and et cetera, and I'm all for it. I've got three daughters. But, well, if women have got it all, what, you know, what's a bloke do? Mm. And so that's, I think there is a lostness or a kind of a lack of purpose for a lot of particularly young men.
So there'd be lots of young men that potentially listening to the show. And I mean, obviously your book is, it would guide them to your book, but what advice would you give those young men who are listening today in terms of helping them identify their own world? And
I think there can be a feeling of impotence for men,
yeah,
whatever age, and that I can't change the world and et cetera. I want to say, I mean, you can make a massive difference in the world, and it may be only a small part of the world, but it'll be the part that you really care about.
Mm.
So you have the ability and the power, and I'm happy to talk about power in a minute if you want, but you have the ability and the power to massively affect the lives of the people that you care about, in fact, the people that you're responsible for. And that is exactly what the Bible says. The Bible assumes that as a son, as a husband, as a father, as a worker, you're able to make a major difference for good or ill in the lives of the people around you.
Mm.
So be very careful how you use that power, and get to it. There's your purpose in life.
So what does that power look like? So you guys listening, they may think sort of overloading and, you know, maybe violence even, but that's not what you mean, right?
No. By power, I mean the ability to influence people and their lives, to make a difference in the lives of people. Let's take an example. Say you are a young man, end of high school, and you're living at home. You consider the difference you can make to your mother's and your father's life in your attitude and how you live and what you do. You can make your mother's life a joy or a living hell by how you respond. Not everyone's going to be a husband or a father, but if you're a husband, you make a massive difference to your wife's life in terms of your attitude to her and how you treat her.
Yes.
Mm. If you're a father, when your kids are small, you have all the power in their life, but you should be kind to them because they'll choose your nursing home.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm close enough to see that now.
Me too.
Yeah. So that's what I mean, that as a man. Now, I'll tell you where it's interesting. You see that in the Bible and in the book I've walked through where the Bible talks, the New Testament writers talk to, you know, men as sons, as husbands, as fathers, as masters or servants, etc. You also see it with Jordan Peterson. I don't think Jordan Peterson is not a card-carrying Christian in the way I describe it, but his message is life is hard, so get your act together because you can make a major difference in the lives of the people around you. And it's young men who are stepping up and saying, hey, why didn't anyone tell me this? You can see that it resonates with young men. You got power. You want to make a difference. Well, grow up and make life better for people around you.
Mm. And does that involve them taking risks and taking, you know, an adventure, if you will, in terms of their lives?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's what God wired young men up to do.
Yeah.
Yes. And by the way, young men are strong and active and risk-taking and dumb. And that's why young men need older men.
I'm glad you did this bit at the end.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. When the New Testament talks to young men, so John the Apostle says, I speak to you young men because you're strong.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. But then he says, humble yourselves before your elders. Learn.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, when he speaks to old men aren't as strong. I know that every time I get a hug from my son, hug from a friendly gorilla. But what do old men have? Old men have example and influence. Mm. And so the New Testament says to older men, like in 1 Peter chapter 5, he says, set an example.
Yeah.
Mm. So there's younger men need older men as mentors and setting an example. But older men need to put themselves out and help lift young men up. And I think as a society, we're losing that intergenerational care for one another.
Yeah, the mentorship of the young.
Yes.
Yeah. And even in the church setting, you know, it's so important that the older people, the older men in the church get alongside the younger men and help them in every way of their life. If they build those relationships, they can help them with their faith, they can help them with their marriage, they can help them with their children, they can help them with in lots and lots of ways.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, we're going to have to come back and get a second show out of you. But one final thought before we do wrap up this week's show. There's a quote from the book and you say, a life of healthy masculinity will always have a self-sacrificial element to it. Now, that's not necessarily what men want to hear, but explain that for us.
I reckon the default setting of the human heart is selfishness.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? And I think men are better at it than women. Yes. We are just naturally more selfish. Partly it's because we can be, right? Yeah. But a bloke... I'll just say it. A bloke's much more likely to be selfish than a woman, particularly if she's a mum. And so healthy masculinity is going to mean stepping up, but it also means stopping being selfish and turning up. And that costs. It means I'm going to put someone else's needs ahead of my own. And, man, that is a hard lesson to learn. I've been working on it for Well, I've been a Christian 40-something years, and I've still got a long way to go with it. So that's what I mean. And here's the irony, though. Jesus says, as you give up your life, you know, whoever loses their life for him will find it. It's as you give up your life in the service of others that you actually find life. Now, how do you know that that's true? You got to start doing it.
Exactly. That's great advice.
And on that cheerful note.
No, that's how you find life.
Yeah, that's right.
Serve others, serve him. Yeah.
On that cheerful note, we will wrap up the show with that, though. That's a good end point to the show. Go and start serving and see if you find true fulfillment in that. And we pretty much guarantee you will. But our special guest this week has been Al Stewart. The book is The Manual, Getting Masculinity Right. You can find copies in Coorong, online as well. If you Google just The Manual, Getting Masculinity Right by Al Stewart, encourage you to get a copy of this book. There is so much in this book that we have not tapped into this show, which is why we're going to get Al back and continue this conversation next week right here on Momentum. In the meantime, Al, thanks for joining us, mate. Been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to MomentumAustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at MomentumAustralia.org. Until next time, keep moving forward with Momentum.